Part 3 of the Anything Ghost Mega Macabre Halloween Special.
And here's a couple stories from Joak in the U.S.
I occasionally buy properties that have gone into foreclosure. I also have developed a process of buying distressed properties through probate. Some of these houses are very old and in disrepair. One piece of property I bought in the small town that we live in, we actually live outside of town, and inside town there was this house that I purchased through a VA foreclosure. And the house sat outside of town. It was an old home built in the 1800s. And when I bought it, you don't get the opportunity to really research these properties before you buy them, as far as they're physically research them and inspect them. I go to the courthouse and can, you know, look at the paperwork. But after I bought this house, I noticed that a lot of the foundation was newer, with I-beams in it, which isn't, you know, naturally the way they do things back when this house was built. So I did some research and found out that this house was originally the stagecoach house station for this small town, and it was in the woods. And in the early 1900s, they moved it out, back out to the street where it is, where I bought it. And some of the locals refer to this house as being the most haunted house in this town. Now, I didn't pay too much attention to that. But anyway, when I bought it and started doing work on it, some weird things started happening. The first time was, it was in the wintertime, and I was there. I would go there myself and do a little bit of painting. And the first thing I did was set up in the basement. I sent up a dehumidifier in the middle of the basement. This was in the fall, starting to be early winter, and it was still damp. I set the dehumidifiers up so they would dry out the basement, and we would work in the basement, bring contractors in for that, and then do painting and that. Anyway, it was on a Saturday that I'd been there and set everything up, and the next morning, early Sunday morning, I came back out to the house, and the dehumidifier was unplugged, and the cord was wrapped around it and perfect, like coiled up around the dehumidifier, unplugged and just coiled like you'd see on top of a Navy ship where they would do the ropes perfectly. And this is kind of weird because I'm the only one with a key to the house, and I'm the only one that would be there. And like I say, there's no houses right next to it or anything. So I thought that was kind of weird. And then the next week, I didn't say anything to anybody, but the next week I went in there and I had paint cans and different cleaning stuff in the basement. And I showed up one morning and I opened up, went in the garage, and all the cans were stacked in the middle of the garage, stacked all the way to the ceiling. And it was like, wow, this is crazy. First of all, to do that without them falling was an accomplishment. But like I say, I'm the only one that has keys for the house. The house is all locked up when I'm not there. I left. They were scattered all over the basement. The next morning I show up and they're stacked right up to the ceiling. So there again, I don't know if someone was playing games, but I don't know who could have gotten into the house. And then I started hearing noises and stuff when I would be working in the house. And I listened to my radio. I listened to NPR and books on tape and things like that. And so I had a guy that was working for me that would come out and paint these buildings. And he came out and he was painting the stairs. And I was in the basement when he was there and everything was fine. And then I came back and his truck was gone and he was gone. And I saw him in town and I said, you know, what's going on? And he said, I'm not going back to that house. And he wouldn't tell me. He wouldn't tell me why. He just said, I'm not going back to the house. And I paid him and he never went back. So I don't know if these are ghost, you know, proper ghost story, but these are things that happened in this house. It was supposed to be haunted. I never saw a ghost or anything, but these are just the weird occurrences that happened. I bought a piece of property one time on Main Street in this small northeastern Ohio town. And this town was, these buildings were built in the 1800s. And the two that I bought were right next to each other, and they were two stories tall. And then they had a basement also in the back that you could access. But these are the old redstone buildings that you see in these old towns. And what I do is I go in and completely restore them like they were when they were new back in the 1800s. This particular house was built in, I think it was 1884, and I am the fourth owner of the house, of the building. It has apartments in it and storefronts. Anyway, when I bought the property, I would go in and do some work in the basement, and I would find stuff in the walls because, you know, the people, it had been empty for like 15 years before I bought it. And I found pictures in the walls and newspapers, and I found a whole stack of letters that were written from the owner's grandfather in World War I to his mother, or his girlfriend at the time. They were really neat. And one time I was in the basement, and I heard kids running up and down the stairs in one of the storefronts. It was a wood floor, tongue and groove flooring, and you could hear these kids running back and forth. And I thought maybe one of my sons or daughter were in there with their kids, but they don't have keys to the stores, and you have to enter them on Main Street. So I went up there, and there was nobody there. And this happened from time to time, and I got to the point where I just didn't do anything about it. It was just, you hear doors close, and you hear these people, you could hear them walking up the stairs, and it was very loud, because you're in the basement, and the whole building's made out of wood. And I just didn't say anything about it. And one day, my son was with me, my oldest son. We were doing something in the basement, and you could hear these kids running back and forth, and you could hear them playing, just like, you know, 6-7-year-olds were in there running up and down a store, and, you know, with wooden floors. And I looked at my son, and he said, "Who's up there?" And I just started laughing. I said, "Go look." And he went, and he came back, and he was like, "White as a ghost." He said, "There's nobody up there." And I said, "I know, this happens all the time." And this was another building where I had a contractor in, and we were up painting one of the apartments upstairs. And there again, I left them in there, and this was a different contractor. And there again, you know, I came back and I met him. He was out on the street, and he was like real nervous, and he said he wasn't going back in the building. And I paid him, and, you know, he never came back. So there again, this guy wouldn't tell me what it was, you know. I don't know if it's a macho thing or what, but they don't want to tell you what happened when they were in there. You know, maybe their, you know, imagination just ran away with them. But when I was in, I definitely heard the noise of the kids. I didn't have a phone at the time that recorded, so I guess if it happened now, I would. But that's the story of my Main Street property.
And here's a fictional piece by Robert in Santee, California. The Woman with the Red Hair. The movie I'd been waiting for was finally here, Black Chariots. It was supposed to be the best science fiction movie of the year, and it had Luke Hammer in it. I took the day off of work so I could go beat the crowds. As I waited in line, I realized that I was successful. No one was in line. I paid the woman for my ticket, and she handed me my ticket stub. I walked in and sat in the theater. I was the only one in there. I sat down and searched through my emails. I lost grip, and my cell phone fell below my seat. I reached down for it, but was unable to reach it because it had fallen down below my seat, so it was centered where I could not get at it. I got on my knees and rescued the phone. When I got up in my seat, I noticed a woman had come in and sat in front of me at an angle. She had long, flowing red hair that almost had a glow to it. I looked up toward her, but I could not see her face. She moved her hand on her leg, and she strummed her fingers in a quiet rhythm. I imagined how beautiful she must be. She was dressed very nice for a movie. She looked to be alone. She laughed and strummed her hand. I can't explain why, but I had to see her face. I looked to see if I could see her face, concentrating on her, but she kept her head placed so that I was unable to see her face. The credits started and the movie began. Any interest in the red-haired woman was lost in my desire to see the movie. I concentrated on the film. I would not let her stand between me and my dream of seeing black chariots. I heard her laughing. Not a loud laugh. It was faint but audible. She folded her hands together. However, it was in an unnatural way. A fast writhing of her hands together, as if she was nervous or in some kind of pain. I looked past her to the screen. She laughed again. But the movie wasn't funny. Why is she laughing? I thought to myself. And then I thought to myself, this woman is weird. She really was getting to me, scaring me. I noticed in my peripheral vision that her head was turning around and facing me. I felt like she was looking at me as I watched the movie, and I looked fast toward her, and she looked away. She laughed again. I can't believe this. But she got to me. She made me feel uncomfortable. I just wanted to get away from her. I got up and started walking out. Now it was all the opposite. I didn't want to see her face. I imagined her as some old vile hag, like a woman in a Stephen King movie, The Shining in the hotel room. And I felt her eyes watching me. It was a feeling, but it was strong. She was laughing as I walked to leave the theater. I couldn't stand it any longer. I turned around to face this red-haired demon that had ruined my dream of seeing black chariots. She wasn't there. She was nowhere. She wasn't anywhere in the theater. I scanned the theater, but I couldn't see her. It was dark, and I felt like she could be anywhere. I had to get out of there. Was she a ghost or some kind of specter? The more I thought about it, the more scared I became. The manager saw me leaving and came up and asked what was wrong. I explained what happened. He took his flashlight and went to the theater to see if he could find the red-haired woman. The manager came back 5 minutes later. He was shaking his head. He signed my ticket and said to come back later when the theater was full and I could see the movie. When I came back later to watch the movie, there was a long line. I went in the theater, and it was half full. The movie started, and I watched, losing myself in the movie. About halfway through the movie, I felt a person behind me kick my seat. I turned my head, looking back, but there wasn't anyone behind me. I felt uneasy, remembering the woman from earlier. I turned again, not wanting to miss the movie, and started watching again. Then I felt something touching my head, and I moved my hand back, feeling my hair where I was touched. Thinking it was my imagination, I felt something touching my hand, and I heard a voice say, "Play Misty for me," in a soft whisper. And then I heard the laugh, that soft, hissing laugh that was unique to the woman in the red hair. I was not going to let whatever this was make me leave. I looked to watch the movie again. Nothing else happened. I was able to finish seeing the movie. But going to the movie was never the same after that. I always looked around me, wondering if I would see the woman with the red hair. I had a vivid dream that night of being in a dark cemetery. I looked, and I could see the woman with the red hair facing away from me. I walked toward her. "Show yourself to me," I said. She quickly turned around, and she had no face. I woke up gasping. It was just a dream, but the memory would be with me from this time on.
Hi, Lex. This is Fabian from Texas, and I wanted to give you a bit of an update on my story. Well, last story I sent in, I mentioned how I work at a facility for senior citizens, and it's three stories high, and it's shaped like a giant U. And on the top floor, on the left side of the U, I had an experience up there with a lady who had passed away. And since the lady passed away a while back, we've had people say they've seen a lady in white. And like some staff have told me this, Even staff who like would just kind of blurt out one time. The new staff once tell me, "Who's that lady?" And I was like, "Well, what lady?" Just there's a lady in white on third floor. I've seen her walk. I didn't want to say anything. I knew it was a ghost, but I was kind of curious. Other people told me the same thing, that they've seen someone in white, and I had never seen her. I'd seen shadows here and there, and I had the experience in the stairwell on the third floor, the very top of the U, and you know, a couple of other experiences here and there, mostly with shadows and things, but that particular apparition, vision, whatever you want to call it, I hadn't seen. We have a gentleman who lives on the third floor, in that hallway, and he's the one who sees her most of the time. And he's many times he'll say, "I've seen that lady," and he calls her he has a weird name for her I can't pronounce. It's like some kind of Spanish. It's like a weird regional Spanish thing that I can't even pronounce really. And or he calls her the ghost because he has a kind of heavy accent. And he'll say the ghost. He goes, "Oh my God, look!" He goes, "Look, Fabian, look! I saw the ghost. You know, here the other day, but I was here. I saw her, and she's down the hall." And he's a very strange accent, which is, I don't know, it's just kind of funny sometimes. Anyway, so last year, kind of towards the end, we had a resident pass away. The young resident, fairly young, actually only in his 50s, and he died very suddenly. And then this neighbor of his on the third floor tells me, he goes, "You know, she's still here." And at this point, the man had passed away. He'd been gone for about like almost a week. And he's telling me, he goes, you know, "She's still here." I'm like, who's still here? And he goes, "The lady, the ghost, I see her in the hallway." And he goes, I saw her before he died, and I'm still seeing her." I'm like, "You are?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "Yeah." He goes, "She's coming for somebody else." He goes, "She came for him, she's coming for someone else." I'm like, "Okay." Well, then we had on our north wing, which is a whole different building kind of attached to us, kind of like on the right side of the U, there's like a little slanted hallway. And it's for people who need more care. And we call it our north wing. The people on hospice. And he tells me that he's seeing her again. And then about 3, maybe 4 days later, a lady who was over there passed away. I'm like, okay. Well, then he said he stopped seeing her. She was gone. Well, time goes by, a couple of weeks or so. And he tells me again. He goes, "You know, Fabian," he goes, "I saw her again." He goes, he'll ask me, he goes, "Did you see her? Had you seen her down the hallway?" And I always tell him, "Sir, I'm busy. I'm here to work. I don't pay attention to ghosts." And he goes, "If they get in the way of my money, then I'll pay attention. But right now, no, I don't pay attention." And he said, "You know," he goes, "the ghost, I saw her down the hall again." I'm like, "Okay." Well, after he told me this, about 4 days later, we had a gentleman on the north wing on the hospice. He passed away. So we're like, "Okay." Time goes by. And then he said it again. He goes, "I saw her." I'm like, "Okay, what happened?" He goes, "It's really in the morning," because he's diabetic and he gets up and he snacks at night to keep his blood sugar constant. And he's getting up, and then he likes to look out his door, look around and everything to see what's going on. And he says he sees her walking in the hallway. So he thinks someone's going to go. Someone's going to die, basically. And the other gentleman on the north wing, who we kind of thought was going to be passing pretty soon, he passes away. Okay, well then, by this point, it's December, I believe, and we had a gentleman who wasn't there. He'd been out for a while for visiting family and health reasons and things, and this man's telling me again, he's like, "I saw the ghost, just come back." I'm like, "Okay." Well, we get word that this man who wasn't there passes away. He'd been gone for a while. He'd been gone for, I'd say, a good couple weeks, maybe 3 weeks. And I made mention to my coworkers. I said, "You know, I knew somebody was going to pass away because the other gentleman on third floor had seen the lady in white again." And they're kind of giving me this look like, "That's not funny. Don't joke about that." And I told them, "I'm not joking. He told me like about 3 days ago and that he saw her again." And so he passes away. And so it's kind of awkward. And then a little bit later, about a week or so later, he said he sees her again. And so I remember it was a Thursday. It was a Thursday, and I kind of think in my head, like, "Oh, hell, what now?" And he says, "I see her. I saw the ghost." I'm like, "Okay." Well, it was a Thursday, and then the couple days later on Saturday, I had a gentleman who lives there, and he's a younger resident also. He comes to me right when I get to work, and he's telling me, "You know, I have a relative who's in the hospital now." And I'm like, what's going on?" And he says, well, this relative of mine just got pneumonia, but I talked to him this morning and talked to him, another relative who's with him, but we're not worried. He had surgery not so long ago, was recovering from the surgery, and he was recovering fine, but caught pneumonia somehow when, or developed pneumonia when he was in recovery. And so we're not worried. He's a fighter. He's, had health problems in the past, and he's, we're not worried about it. I'm like, okay. He goes, he's had health problems here and there, but whenever, like, he's a real strong guy. He's real healthy, and any health problem, he bounces back way quicker than, than they ever say he would. And well, then I'm like, okay. So he tells me this around 2:30 in the afternoon, and then around 5, he comes to me and says, I just got word. I'm like, what's going on? He goes, the relative I told you about, he passed away. He goes, everyone was surprised. Everyone was shocked that he passed away. I'm like, oh, are you okay? He's like, yeah. I mean, it was just because he just looked, he didn't look sad. He looked confused. He was like, I don't understand this. He goes, this guy's gone through more serious things and bounced back like completely fine. And this time when they think he'll be okay with some antibiotics and some time and everything, he'll be fine, he doesn't. Well, time goes by, and then the resident on the third floor tells me again. He goes, I saw the lady. I saw the ghost. I saw her going down the hall. And I'm like, okay, what now? And I said, you're serious? He goes, yeah, I saw the ghost. So I'm thinking, I'm kind of looking around, thinking, who's it going to be next? We couldn't figure out who would be next. And then he tells me this around like 3 in the afternoon, and then about 6 that same day, I get called to a resident's room who's one of his neighbors, and she tells me, she's just kind of sitting there in shock. I'm like, what's going on? And she's like in her 80s. And she just goes, I just got a phone call from my son. I'm like, is he okay? She goes, it's the weirdest thing. He just called me and said that my daughter-in-law was just put on hospice and that we need to prepare ourselves because it could be any day now. And I was like, okay. She's just sitting there like, it's the weirdest thing. It's, I don't understand it. Just she, I didn't know she was sick. She just, he saw that she's not feeling well, to the doctor, and then all of a sudden she's in hospice. Like, it was that quick. And I've heard of people that happened to, I've heard of people that happened to before in the past where like this, they get sick really quick, go downhill really fast. But she, and this woman is a former nurse, so she knows that it can happen, but she's just sitting there just confused. Like, I don't, it's just so bizarre. Well, then time goes by, and at this point, I believe it's February. The gentleman is telling me how that, because some people in our building had some, had the flu, and he got the flu, and he kept looking around for the lady, just scared that she was going to come get him because he had the flu, but he recovered, people recovered, everyone was fine. And then it's towards the end of February, and he tells me again, he goes, I saw her, I saw the ghost, she's back. I'm like, okay. And like every time he says that, within like a few days, we hear word that something either passed away or is someone passing away. Even if they're not there, it's, someone's going to pass away. And so he points down the hall and he goes, look down the hall. I'm like, okay. He goes, there's a laundry room there. And then about halfway down, and then towards the very end of the hallway, where it dead ends at the, bottom of the U, basically, you go to the right and there's a stairwell. Straight down to the stairwell for the second, third, and then the first and the ground floors. And he goes, I saw her pass the laundry room, go, and she turned to right. And he goes, to the stairs. So I think she go down the stairs. I'm like, you sure? He goes, I know that it wasn't a person. And I can go, no, it was her. It was the lady of the ghost. I saw her. And he says, she went down that way and she went to the right to the stairs. I'm like, okay. So I kind of keep, my eyes open, my ears open, thinking, who's it going to be now? Keep looking around. No one passes away. Nothing. And I'm like, okay. So, like a week goes by, nothing. 2 weeks goes by, nothing. I'm like, okay. And so then, but after he told me this, about 2.5 weeks later, next to the stairwell, like really right next to like the stairwell, then it's the very next door, is a lady, and she's not originally from Texas. She's from somewhere on the East Coast, like I think it's like Maryland or something. And she's like lived most of her life up in the East Coast, in New England, and all the East Coast places and things. And she always stops me because she has trouble seeing. And she'll show me postcards, letters, and she goes, can you please, because she gets letters from people who over there, friends, family, and everything. And she'll say, can you look at the postmark and tell me where it's from? And I'll tell her, oh, it's from this state or that state or whatever. She's like, okay. And she says, can you please tell me the date on it? Because she wants to see how long it took to get there. And like, she's always like, she always wants to make a note of it in her letters and her term postcard saying, oh, I know you wrote me like a week or two ago, but I just got it today and everything, so people don't think she's, taking a long time to get back on her correspondences. And she gets a lot of letters and things. And so it's been about 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks at this point. And she stops me and she goes, can you look at this envelope and tell me where it's from? And I tell her it's from the East Coast. It was like, I remember it was New York State or Maryland, one of those. And she goes, okay. I said, oh, okay, I know who that is then. And she shows me this really pretty card, a picture of Jesus and stuff, this man's name on it and these things. And I go, what is that? She goes, oh, it's a Mass card. I go, a Mass card? She goes, yeah. She goes, a friend of mine back east passed away. And so the church is sending, I'm still on the mailing list of the church, and they're sending out these old Mass cards and everything, and with the information, for the services. And we're signing up, saying wishes to the family, and then we're going to send them back, and the church is going to give them to the family. I said, okay. And she goes, can you tell me where it was from? I tell her. She's like, okay. And she goes, can you look at the date on it? And I look at the date on it, and then I look at the card itself. When it says when the man passed away, her friend passed away about 3 days after her neighbor had told me he had seen the lady in white. And I kind of thought, well, he said, because he was at the very end of the hall. He said he saw her go to the end of the hall and turn right into the stairs. Her door is right next to the stairwell door. So I'm thinking it didn't go down the stairs. It went to her apartment. But from where he was at, it looked like she went to the stairs. And since then, that was the very end of February. Since then, there's been no more sightings of her. She just left or just hasn't come back. I mean, or if he asks, he hasn't told anybody. And sometimes he'll tell me, ask me, I'll ask me some once in a while, like, did you see her? Is anything going on? I told him, no, I haven't seen her. And he's like, oh, okay, well, just making sure. But he doesn't like talking like about this with some of the other staff, because they always tell him, no, don't say anything, don't cause a panic or anything like that. But I'm always interested in it because, it's interesting. And then it was weird because about 3 or 4 months ago, I saw something on our second floor. On the second floor, in the very bottom middle of the U, I'm walking towards, the right side of it and going to turn the corner to go up the hallway. And I'm pushing a medication cart, basically. As I'm pushing it, I'm kind of looking at the cart, make sure nothing spills off it or anything. And as I'm walking, I see on the left side of the hallway near these apartments, I see what looks like a woman in a white nightgown. I see white hair, it's curly, and she's kind of just standing by the wall. And it was very odd. It was almost like she had her hands, both hands on the wall, like kind of turning in, almost like to hide. Like she's like semi-facing the wall, head kind of down, and she's just kind of touching it. And it was very odd because I see this kind of like out of my peripheral vision because it's ahead of me, but to the side. And I have this thing always like, the residents kind of joke around because when I hear them walking towards me, I'll say, hello, Mr. and Mrs. something. And they're always like, how do you know that's me? I'll say, I know all y'all's walks, sounds of your walkers, sound of your canes, your voices approaching, everything. And like, there was a joke, I have eyes in the back of my head or whatever. And anyone from a distance, I corner my eye, I'll say, oh, hello, somebody. And they're like, I didn't know you saw me. It's the way I do. And it's, And the weird thing is when I see this, and I see about 2, 3 seconds, I think, I have no idea who that is. Like, and I kind of stop and I look up, and it's gone. And I was a little like kind of surprised. Like, it was daytime too, broad daylight, and I clearly saw this woman. She's facing towards me. Like, her body was facing towards me, but she had turned to the right a little bit towards the wall, and her hands on it. And it was just a very odd kind of position to be. And I see this. And then when I look up, she's gone. I'm like, that's odd. I'm like, okay, kind of strange. So I kind of go to the end of the hall, turn the corner, and I'm looking down on purpose, kind of look around to see if I see anything else. And I'm looking, I'm like, I don't see her anywhere. And that's kind of strange. So I turn the corner to go up the right side of the U, down that hall, and I keep looking, I'm going real slow, and then I look to my left while I'm looking down, and I see her again, and she's further down the hall. She's like back the way I came, and she's doing the same thing. She's basically same vision, same everything. Elderly woman, white nightgown, white hair, looks kind of curly, and she's kind of like leaning against the wall slightly, kind of turned to it, with her hands on it. And like not for support, almost like she's trying to blend into it. And I just see her, I'm like, okay, she's not moving. Like when I saw her both times, she didn't move. She's just standing there. And when I kind of tilt my head to look a little clearer, she's gone. I'm like, okay. Well, that way, further down that hall, like the way I had come, on the bottom left corner of the U, there's an office with two directors who share that office. And they have a window that if you're going down the hall to the bottom of the U and you're going up the left side, there's a little window there so you can see into their office. But they have the blinds there. And they've told me that there's been times they'll be there and they'll see someone walk past, like going up the hall or down the hall about to come around their door. And they'll look and no one's there. And so if they've gotten creeped out here and there, but, you know, they know it's type of business we're in, it's type of building we're in, so they don't have to, you know, get too, you know, too weirded out by it. And so both of the directors who share that office have told me they've seen this happen to both of them multiple times, but they know it's the business we're in, it's the building we're in, we're just kind of accepted, kind of gone from there. And a lot of staff here and there have seen stuff, heard stuff, and a lot of them just kind of ignore it. They don't want to, you know, think of it as, they just want to scope up their business. Some of them, you know, get real into it, want to look around for ghosts, and we even had these two people who used to work night shift, one on each wing, and they used to talk about the things they had seen and all this stuff, and it was kind of weird because we even had this one guy, he worked night shift, and he was working on a north wing one time, and he went to this man's room, and the man told him, he goes, "Who's that other fellow with you?" And he's like, what other fellow? And he goes, "The one, you know, next to you." And he was nobody there. And, you know, he'd never been creeped out before because he said sometimes he'll be talking to a resident and they'll be going, like, "I'm okay," they'll page. And he's like, "What did you need?" They'll be like, "Oh, I'm fine, but can you check the little girl in my closet?" And they'll be like, "What little girl?" He goes, "Little girl in my closet. I think it's a little girl hiding in my closet. I can hear her. Can you just make sure she's okay?" They'll be like, "Okay." He'll get creeped out. And you even had one staff who she was like, any kind of talk about ghosts or anything, it really scares her because she was going to her resident's room and she's there checking this lady. And she goes, it's the weirdest thing. She says, every time she checks some lady in the middle of the night, because the lady has trouble with a certain issue I can't really mention, so she has to wake her up every few hours to check her. And she said, every time she wakes her up, the lady would look at her and go, "Oh, hi." She would kind of look, "So, okay, I'm here, I'm awake." And then she would look down and go, "God, she's so pretty." And she'd be like, "Who?" And she goes, "The little girl with you. Like, she looks so much like you. She even has your hair, and I think your hair's very pretty, and she's just so pretty." And then she would ask, like, "What's her name?" And the girl would be like, "What are you talking about?" She goes, "The little girl with you. She's so pretty, and she looks so much like you. It's amazing." And the staff would be like, "I don't, what little girl?" She goes, the girl you are, she's about 2 years old, I think, probably. And she was standing there, she would actually get scared whenever she checked on this woman because she was scared of her saying that. And she said the weirdest thing is that she'd be telling her this, and then when the lady would kind of like, when she first wake her up, she would tell her this. And then when she kind of like got a little more like kind of stretched a little bit and kind of got more awake, she would kind of like change the subject and like talk like nothing. Like she would act like she hadn't even said it. And the reason the staff was scared of this was because she told me, she goes, "Before I started working here," she goes, "I had a miscarriage about 2.5 years ago." And to hear her say multiple times, she's like, "Who's that little 2-year-old girl with you?" The little girl. She goes, it hurt. It really just hurt hearing that. And she goes, "I have no idea why she said it, but the thought of, you know," she goes, "that the child or spirit of this child still with me, it scares me." And I told her, I'll blame you. I can understand why you'd be uncomfortable. So maybe she's just waiting for her time to be born or something. But, you know, and she goes, "I know." She goes, and then the last time she worked, she changed shifts recently, the last time she worked and this happened, the lady would go, "Oh, there she is again. God, she's so pretty." And she was like, she want to ask if she had to. She's like, "Who?" And she's like, "Little girl with you. God, she has, I see her hair so nice and long, just like yours." And she's like, "The little girl?" She's, "Yeah, she's a little kid." She goes, "I think she's around 10 years old now." And she was kind of like, that kind of took her back even like more. She's like, "She's what?" She goes, "She's, yeah, she's like, she's 10 years old. She looks like she's 10 years old now." So like, she like, anytime we talk about ghosts, like she, they think of that, and it creeps her out. So she's like she really isn't like hearing about it. But yeah. Well, anyway, I know it's kind of long, but you know, that's my story. Once again, this is Fabian from Texas, and thanks for listening, and take care.
The story is from Michael in San Jose, California. Being watched. My family has something of a history with ghosts, and as a child I experienced quite a few things that I cannot explain. But there was one occurrence that really stands out. When I was about 8 years old, my family moved to a different part of Willow Glen, which is the neighborhood where I grew up. It was a nice house in a good area, but I never felt comfortable there, and I don't think the rest of my family did either. The neighborhood was made up of mostly older homes that were very unique. No two were exactly the same. Many of them had rather odd floor plans with strange features that I haven't seen anywhere else. This house was no exception, and it took some getting used to. It was a good size, so my sister and I had our own rooms. The backyard was lush with bushes and trees, filled with baby birds and other wildlife. The house was fairly dark inside, not letting in a lot of natural light. The house itself seemed to have a darkness that hung over it. I always had a strange feeling in that house, especially when I was alone. It didn't matter what part of the house I was in. I felt uneasy, almost as if someone were constantly watching me. I remember feeling this most intensely while playing with toys, either in my room or in the backyard. When I would close my eyes, I got the impression that something was drawing closer and closer to me. It was very creepy. We lived in the house for about 8 months when I had a very frightening, ghostly encounter. At that age, I usually slept through the night without any problem. But this one night, I woke up and looked over at the red numbers on my digital clock that I kept next to the bed. It was 3:13 a.m. I remember that number. It had some kind of significance to me at that time, but I've forgotten exactly why it felt so meaningful. Then I looked across my room and saw a terrifying figure standing about 5 feet from my bed. She was a small, older woman who looked partially decayed, and most of her clothing appeared to have rotted away. She stood perfectly still, staring at me. I was so scared to move or make a sound. I have not felt such a paralyzing fear before or since. All I could do was move my eyes. I very slowly looked the figure over, from the top of her head to her toes, then back to her face. She wore little scraps of clothing covering some of her body, but it was very tattered, and she was mostly nude. Some parts of her were missing skin and had exposed muscle or bone. The areas with the flesh were saggy and wrinkled. Her overall stature was rather old, almost as if she was slightly deformed. I remember thinking she resembled E.T. a little. She stood there perfectly still. She had very little hair on her head, just thin wisps of white sticking out in spots. When I finished looking her over, I stopped on her face. The expression on her face was not menacing. I don't really know how to describe it. I stared deep into her eyes. They seemed too large for her face and never blinked. The pupils also looked really large, and there was no iris, just big, unwavering black circles that seemed to be looking deep inside me. We stared at each other for a while. I felt as if I couldn't look away. Then, very slowly, the figure began to fade. Over the course of about 10 minutes, the old woman disappeared. Once she was gone, I stared at the spot where she had been for some time. I still felt too scared to move or speak. At some point, my tiredness overtook me, and I went back to sleep. The next day, I told my parents about what had happened. They seemed pretty shocked and uneasy about it, and eventually my dad told me that our realtor had informed him that the previous owner had been an old woman who died in the house. We lived there for about 4 more months before moving back to a house on our old street. I don't remember having any other experiences in that time, but you can imagine that I was even less comfortable than before. I think part of the reason we only lived there for a year was the overall discomforting presence that we all sensed, even if it wasn't talked about. Our realtor seemed to find the whole thing funny, joking with me about seeing a ghost and sharing some of the other haunting stories he had heard from his clients about the other homes he sold. As I mentioned, I had seen some ghostly things before this, but this is the longest and the closest encounter I have ever had. I was very interested in ghosts and the macabre as a kid, but I didn't find anything about this experience to be enjoyable. I'm not sure why it happened, or if there was any deeper meaning to it, but it still gives me the chills to remember being a scared little kid staring into those unblinking eyes.
Hey, this is Sarah from Signal Mountain, Tennessee. I have a couple stories. I probably won't get to most of them. I would say that my first story and most significant, it's only the most significant because it was at a point in my life that was very difficult for me. And it was also a ghost in a way that was not just seen by me, and that just holds so much more, you know, I don't know, proof in one way that I wasn't just going totally crazy, because I do like to rationalize out anything that I can rationalize, I will, and then anything else that's kind of like this, I may clump into a, this is just something unknown that is probably beyond the scope of what humans can understand. So that's kind of what I think of when I think of ghosts, for the most part. And I can be very hesitant of believing some things. So in this story, I was in college, and I'd just gotten back into it. I'd taken a year and a half off and kind of opened my own art gallery, and then decided I needed, I needed to go ahead and go back and get my degree. And I was a little bit down on it, and it was difficult for me. I felt very unsettled. And then I found out in my first semester back to this difficult college, for me at the time, that I was pregnant, and I was very scared, and I felt very alone, and I was living with my boyfriend at the time, and he was kind of very, he didn't want to take responsibility, and I was pretty sure I was going to have to do this on my own. And it kind of was good because it like sparked a fire in me to really get back into school and decide that I really needed to, you know, do well, so that I could, support this child. And I was just starting to get really excited about it. I was about 12 weeks along, and, I remember it was midterms and I was so stressed out, and I went home, and or I had been at my my boyfriend at the time's restaurant, and I had said, okay, I'm just going to wrap it up and go home and go to bed early so I can, you know, get up and do well on the exams. And I went home and I went to sleep immediately. And about 20 minutes later, I suddenly woke up. And you know when you just wake up because you know someone's in the room with you. That's how it was. I just knew someone was in the room. I guess I automatically thought it was my boyfriend, and I turn around and it's really dark, and there's a man standing right over me on the side of the bed. It was a small bed, so he was just looking down right at me, and he was wearing a plaid shirt, and it was really dark, so I couldn't see his face. And this all happened in about 3 seconds, and I just turned around, saw him, and reached my hand out. I guess I thought that it was my boyfriend, and I stuck my hand through the plaid shirt, and I just kind of kept it there and was like, oh my gosh, what just happened? And then as I pulled my hand out, the man disappeared and the shirt disappeared. And I lay there for a minute and was like, what just happened? I guess I'm going completely crazy. But if this was some sort of ghost, or no matter what it was, I felt like it was just being very watchful. So I just decided to go to sleep. I did not feel like it was, you know, anything evil or anything like that. I just felt like he was watching me. And I didn't feel anything bad about it. So then, I went to sleep, and I woke up about 30 minutes later, and my boyfriend and his brother had come into the house, and, he came into the room, and I kind of woke back up and was like, you are not going to believe this, but, I swore I just saw a ghost like 30 minutes ago. I woke up and there was this, you know, this man, and he went white. I mean, like, this is a, you know, a burly, you know, kind of manly man guy who doesn't want to show fear. And he just went ashen white, and he goes, Sarah, we left the restaurant because we saw a ghost there. It was him and his employees and his brother, and they had wrapped up after the night at about 10 or so. And they were talking, and they kept seeing something out of their peripheral vision pass from like one kitchen door and walk through the room and out this other room. And they're just talking and talking. And then suddenly one of them goes, wait, do you see that? And they all kind of look at that door. And they said, they all have kind of a different but similar way to describe it. One said that it was like ash that was in a human form, come out the door and walk through the kitchen and out the other door. And the other said it was like smoke. But they said that they got the sense that it was more, that they weren't welcome there, that they were being watched by this, and that it wasn't a welcome thing. And so they said that they just left, that it terrified all of them, and they just left the restaurant right away. And so I probably wouldn't have believed myself if I hadn't heard that story, because it kind of seemed like it happened at the same time. And, you know, I talked to my boyfriend at the time about it, and then I went and talked to his brother about it. And they had all seen it. So to me, that was real. And the more I thought about it, in the next few days, I ended up miscarrying, and it was the worst thing, you know, of my life. And looking back at it, I kind of felt like that ghost was watching me because he knew that it was going to be, or that it was the hardest time in my life right then. And he was kind of also watching my boyfriend, telling him to kind of shape up. So that's kind of what I took out of it. And that may be kind of pushing it too far. But I guess everyone wants to, you know, have it in some sort of construct that makes sense. So that's kind of what I feel it was. Sometimes I kind of feel like maybe it was my dad, you know, in the future coming back or something like that. But I just felt like it was someone watching us. And, my boyfriend has had several other experiences at that house. The previous owner said that there was a ghost of an old man, that the house was built on top of the original homestead that had been torn down, that was, you know, very, very old. And if you go into the basement, sometimes they would, the previous owners who live next door now, it was a whole family that kind of lived in the area, they said that they had seen this old man whittling in the basement on several occasions. And my ex, when he first moved in, him and his brothers had had a tedder, some sort of toy, thrown like off of a shelf in separate rooms while they slept at their face, and they both woke up and saw that that had happened and went and talked to each other about it. His brother had a fork fly from the dishes at him and said that he had saw the ghost of a little boy. But I just kind of go by what I saw and the experience that I had. Yeah, so that's that story. I have several more, but I think I will maybe have to get to those later. Okay, Flex, so much. Love the podcast, and I'll send in another one at some point. Thank you.
A story from Helen in Jacksonville, Florida. Unexplained bench lift. Having been head of a paranormal group here in Jacksonville, Florida, from approximately 2003 to 2007, I've heard a lot of great ghost stories along the way, and investigated a lot of haunted locations and residences, but I had never had anything happen to me personally, until this one time. We weren't actually doing an investigation, however. We hadn't started investigating at the time of my experience, but soon afterwards we started our team. This may have been the turning point. We had taken our daughter on a ghost tour in St. Augustine, Florida, that enters the well-known haunted Spanish military hospital. They brought us into a room where the surgeries and limbs had been removed and thrown out a window into the street. My daughter and I were sitting on a bench against the wall, and my husband was standing directly next to me. As the guide was speaking, I felt the bench jingle, and it actually lifted my daughter and I and dropped us back down. I immediately stood up and asked if our daughter had felt that too, and of course she did. I then mentioned it to the guide, and he brushed it off, saying, "You know this place is haunted?" I looked at my husband, and he had a very scared look on his face. He had been videotaping, however, not actually been videotaping the incident, because he told me that he felt a cold breeze cross his legs, and he immediately stepped forward. It was at this moment the bench had picked up and dropped us. So basically, a cold breeze swept past my husband, and then the bench lifted and dropped us. My experience means that a spirit or a ghost had pushed past my husband to move the bench that we were sitting on. Maybe the ghost didn't want us on the bench, or maybe he was making a joke. I don't know. But I know I remember that day as if it was yesterday. This was sent in by Ben, the Hellcat. It was down in Texas. I'd been separated from Jim and was making my way home. I was over 100 miles from home, but the distance didn't bother us much in those days. When I rode with Jim, we camped wherever night found us. But when we were separated, I became a woman and not a member of the gang. I always liked to put up at night at a house. I had several reasons for this, one being that it was a good idea to have witnesses to my whereabouts, for it was generally supposed that Jim was never far away from me, and by proving where I was, I could make a good alibi for him. Texas and Indian Territory were sparsely settled then, and we could frequently ride a whole day along the military road and not pass but 3 or 4 horses. As I said, I was on my way home. Night was coming on, and the dark, lowering clouds told me that a storm was coming on. I urged my horse forward, hoping to find a house before dark, for the storm would break soon afterward. Had it not been for that, I would have feared little whether I found one before midnight. Just at sunset, I came to a large double log house. A nice wide path led up to the house, and a plain path led from the house to a splendid spring. The yard was grown up with weeds, and a portion of the porch and hall were gone, but otherwise the house was in excellent condition. I rode up and called, "Hello?" And no one answered. Rode in. I rode right under the porch, where the floor was all torn up and dismounted. The house was vacant, but every room was nicely swept and clean as if it had been tidied up that afternoon. In one of the big rooms was a ladder leading to the loft. I went up and peered into the garret. It too was empty, save for a small ball over in the far corner, that I thought was a hickory nut or a walnut. Not knowing how far it was to another house, I decided to remain there all night, for both myself and my horse would be protected from the storm. I ate the lunch I carried in my saddlebags, fed my horse, tied him up and made a bed of my saddle blanket, and retired. The storm broke early, and the room was continually lightened by flashes of electricity, while the rain came down in torrents. About midnight, I was awakened by my horse snorting in terror. I had a strange feeling, as if something was about to happen to me, but I couldn't define it any closer. I thought I heard a soft footfall in the room, and by one of the flashes of lightning, I thought I saw a cat. I rolled over and was soon asleep again. About 2 hours later, I was again wakened by the snorting and restlessness of my horse. Usually very quiet, he was now in a frenzy of fear. I raised up, and as I did, I heard a noise, something like a marble being rolled over the floor. I looked in that general direction, and beheld a pair of fiery eyes gleaming at me. The storm had passed, and though the rain still came down in torrents, the lightning was less frequent and vivid. By the flashes, I made out something cat-shaped, but much larger than an ordinary house cat, larger than a wild cat, in fact, sitting just a few feet from me, rolling a nut or a marble across the floor from one paw to the other. "Kitty! Kitty!" I called, but the strange object never blinked or moved, except to keep its ball rolling back and forth across the floor with that grating noise that was becoming very trying on my nerves. "Scat!" I cried with more vehemence, but it never made any move except to slap its plaything from one paw to the other. "Scat, you devil!" I yelled, throwing my tin cup, which made an awful clatter, but I might as well have tried to command the rain to stop for all the good it did. Then, drawing my six-shooter, I cocked it and took deliberate aim between the blazing eyes. My pistol almost touched the thing's head, and the blaze from the muzzle went clear through his head. But still, it sat there, rolling that thing back and forth. The other five bullets went through its body just as fast as I could fire my pistol. And when the last bullet had chugged into the heavy oaken logs of the wall, the mysterious animal still sat there staring at me and rolling that plaything back and forth. I hadn't been scared until my six-shooter was empty. Then fear seized all over me. I was trembling like a leaf, but I managed to grab my saddle and get out of the room. I was so weak I could hardly walk. My horse was frantic, pitching and rearing so I could not get near him. I had to lead him out into the road before I could get him calmed down sufficiently to saddle him. I rode some distance and came to a big tree where I took refuge and was partially protected from the rain. As soon as day began to break, I started on my journey, and about daylight I came to a house. I was wet to the skin and had been for 2 hours or more. I stopped to get breakfast, and after I changed my clothes, the woman asked me where I had spent the night. "Not much of anywhere," I replied. "Partly under a tree, and part of the time riding out in the rain." "Couldn't you find a house?" the old woman asked, casting a knowing glance at her grown daughter, who was sitting at the table. "Oh, I saw one back about 6 miles, but it was deserted, and I didn't much fancy staying there by myself," I replied, carelessly wanting to make them do the talking, for their actions convinced me that there was a story connected to the house. "Well, you wouldn't have stayed there if you would have stopped," spoke up the girl. "That's the haunted house." "Haunted house? What do you mean?" I asked. "Why, it's haunted. No one can live there. There have been 12 people there in the last year, and none of them had stayed more than 3 days. It used to belong to Colonel so-and-so. One night, someone hid behind the gatepost and shot him as he rode up to his home. He rides the old horse he rode in the army nearly every night. The clatter of the horse's hoofs wake up people, and they move out the day after they see the colonel and his old horse. I'd wish he would have come out last night. I'd got on my horse and ridden along with him. He'd been some company. And anyway, he'd not been such a terrifying sight as I did see," said I. "Oh, you saw the cat!" cried both the women in concert, throwing up their hands. "And I am sure my face wasn't any whiter when I left the house than theirs were at the mention of the sight I had seen." And again, that was sent in by Ben in the U.S., and it's an article from the Fort Smith News Record in 1903, so it's public domain now. And I guess a bit behind the lady that supposedly sent in the article, her name was Belle Starr, the one telling the story, and she was married to Jim Reed and was a member of the Younger Gang. And from what Ben told me, I guess it was part of his research, she was murdered in 1889, and it went unsolved. So that's the Hellcat. Next story is from Rick in the U.S., the Crosstalk. Only later did it come back to him with any significance that the telephone rang that afternoon with an odd, flat sound, not its normal tone. Half asleep on the couch, Jeff sat up, a twinge of middle-aged backache making itself known in his lower spine as he swung his legs to the floor. "Lucy? Lucy?" There was no answer from anyone in the house, and the phone was still ringing. "What's the use of being married if you have to answer the phone yourself?" Jeff muttered. He shuffled across the other side of the living room, picked up the receiver. "Hello?" Nothing. Not even the honeybee drone of the dial tone. He hung up, grumbling, then leaned through the lounge room door. "Lucy!" Jeff frowned. "Where is she?" He clucked his tongue, suddenly remembering, of course, her shopping spree. Brian's coming home tonight. If Jeff was being honest with himself, he had to admit he wasn't entirely looking forward to meeting again with his estranged son. He'd left the house 2 years ago, parting on bad terms with his father. "You never take time to understand me." Jeff had never actually uttered the word disappointment, but came close to it. "You never do what I tell you," had been his recurring phrase, and that had finally pushed Brian away. Now a reunion, brokered by Lucy, the mother, the wife, who always tried to see both sides, though she would often tell Jeff that Brian was not a child anymore. "You can't tell him how to live." Brian was 19 now. No, must be nearer to 20. Yet, despite misgivings, Jeff was curious as to what his son's independence had wrought. Had he made anything of himself? Was he still as stubborn as he'd been? Or was he more amenable now? Jeff turned around and was once more heading for the couch when the phone started again. He glared at it, waiting for it to stop, but it kept ringing that odd, flat sound. "No, it's normal ring." Jeff shrugged and picked up the receiver again. "Hello?" No answer. "Hello?" Still nothing. He was about to drop the receiver back down in its cradle when a faraway voice said, "Dad!" Jeff pressed the receiver close to his ear. "Brian? Brian, is that you?" "Dad! Dad!" The voice grew louder. Yes, it's me. It's Brian. 2 years away, and he didn't sound any different from the day he left. In a voice cracked with emotion, Jeff said, "Hello, son. How have you been?" "Dad, I need your advice." Jeff hesitated. He didn't know how to answer. His independent son was asking his advice. "About what?" he asked carefully. "Dad, I want to know which way to go." "Which way to go? I don't quite... I need to know whether I should go on or go back." "Go on or go back? Brian, you're not making sense." "I don't know how to express it. I'd like to go back." "Go back?" said Jeff incredulously. "Yes." "Absolutely not." "But Dad, I want to. And yet, now that I'm here, it seems wrong somehow." "Where's here?" said Jeff, with some of the old annoyance with his son coming back into his voice. It was then that he heard the other sound on the line, an echoing babble, unintelligible and faint in the background, as if Brian were calling from a crowded, noisy hall. "Brian, I don't understand. Where are you?"
"On the highway. I'm on the highway."
"All right. Now tell me what's happened."
"No time to explain."
"You're still the same, aren't you? Everything I tell you, gainsay."
"No. No time. No time."
The voice was fading again, as if to underline that there was no time.
"Please, Dad, I'll do what you say. You were right. You were right. But I need to know now. Should I go on, or should I go back?"
"You'll listen to me for once?"
"Yes. Yes.
Go on."
"Okay, Dad. I'll go on."
"You know, Brian, your mother and I really want to see you..." Jeff stopped, aware he was now talking to silence. The background sounds, the faraway babble, had cut off suddenly, without even the click of the receiver being hung up. Brian's was a closed coffin funeral. His highway accident had smashed him up very badly, though had not killed him outright. He had lingered. "I said go on," Jeff whispered to himself at the gravesite. Lucy, crying mother's tears, never understood what he meant by this. And her husband, never forgiving, never explained. Phones make him nervous now. He still waits for one to ring with that odd, flat sound. Not its normal tone. A story from David in New Jersey. Mother. When I was in high school, I went through a period when, for whatever reason, I kept having a terrible dream over and over. In each dream, the situation was different, but the outcome was always the same. I would be stabbed to death. These dreams were very, very vivid and terrifying. Even though I had these dreams more than 20 years ago, I can still remember the fear I felt in the dreams and the feeling of not being able to escape. Anyway, while I was going through this period of dreams, one night I awoke in the middle of the night and went to the kitchen to get something to drink. As I entered the kitchen, I found my mother sitting at the table. It was in the dark, and she was crying her eyes out. Feeling surprised, to say the least, about finding my mother like this, I asked her why she was crying, and she said in between her sobs that she had the most terrible dream. A deep chill ran through my body as she then told me her dream. I was stabbed to death. The other experience involving my mother happened this year. Back in February, my mom died suddenly after having a fall in her home in Virginia. I was visiting my girlfriend in New Jersey at the time for a Valentine's Day. My aunt called me that day after the holiday to tell me that my mother had fallen. We had been through this many times before. She had fallen, and since I was coming back to Virginia the next day, I'd planned to see her then. But then, just a few short hours later, my aunt called me back
to tell me she was gone. I was devastated and felt so sad for not being there when she died. The next day I drove straight from New Jersey to the hospital in Virginia where her body was. Thankfully, I was able to see her one more time, and I will never forget how she looked. I then went home, and I was tired from the long drive and from the sudden death of my mother. And all I wanted to do was take a hot shower and lay down for a bit. But as soon as I laid down in bed and closed my eyes, still awake, I heard a very loud and distant three knocks on the window directly above my head. Bang, bang, bang. It was like someone was trying to get my attention. I remember feeling annoyed and thinking, "You know what? If you want me, call me, fool." I know I was home alone at the time, and the landlord was not there. When he returned that night, I mentioned to him what happened, and we both peered outside, but didn't see anything. The next morning, I went around to the back of the house, where my window was, and I checked to see if there were any footprints in the snow that had fallen a couple days prior. But there were no tracks leading up to or away from my window. Nothing but undisturbed snow. I know I heard those loud knocks on my window, and I was not asleep at the time. I moved to New Jersey just 2 weeks after that, and nothing else happened. Maybe it was my mom who rapped on the window. Who knows?
Hi, my name is Nick from around Chicago. I'm a new listener to the podcast. I'm enjoying it greatly. In the past couple days, I've definitely talked myself into getting the VIP package so I could go back and listen to all the archived episodes and enjoy those as well. I feel like once you listen to one, the day goes by just that much faster, and I really enjoy listening to it at work, so I appreciate all the great work you're doing and all the great stories that everyone's sending into the show. I generally don't find myself as someone who's sensitive to these kind of things, whether they be paranormal or just unexplainable, but a couple weeks ago, my fiance, who's really a sincere and genuine and sweet person, pretty jovial, and provides good counterbalance to me sometimes. She went through her morning routine, which includes waking up, taking care of our new puppy, Cocker Spaniel, and then proceeding to tell me about every single thing she's dreamed about that night. Sometimes it's a 2-minute conversation, sometimes she wants to drag it on to 2 hours, depending on how much time we have, and she's always astounded when I can never repeat any of my stories, I guess, or any of my dreams. I guess she got as fed up as she could possibly be, being the nice person that she is, and asked if I even have dreams. And I told her no, I genuinely don't think I do. And I told her that I don't remember ever having dreams. And that was probably the only lie I ever told her. Because I do remember having dreams. I remember having dreams as a kid, as long as I can remember. And I guess this is a story about that. The first dream I started having was of our house outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It was a nice house. Nothing too flashy, I guess. I remember when these dreams would occur, like in all good dreams, or at least dreams that are good at fooling you into thinking they're not dreams, and you're doing things that you would normally be doing. So I was a kid, and I'd be either playing on the floor or doing something, maybe watching TV, and then all of a sudden, I'd hear this ticking sound, like a clock, you know, like, and I'd just continue playing, and it wasn't anything you'd think about, and then it would register. It wasn't necessarily scary then, but it was foreboding and ominous, and you you essentially realize that that clock wasn't counting. It wasn't keeping track of time. It was counting down. It was a timer. And there was a sense of fear and urgency every single time I realized this in my dream. It was almost like I was playing hide and go seek. I got this urge to hide. And I did that every time. I hid wherever kids would hide, under a table and, you know, in the couch cushions, anything. And then the ticking would stop. Every single time you'd hear like a crackling shuffle, bones grinding against one another, but definitively, as in steps or shuffling of feet. And no matter where I was hiding, whether I was facing the wall or I could see out, I had my back against the wall, you'd see this being, this woman. I wouldn't even call her a woman. She was a hag walking towards you. And even if you didn't see her, you knew she was coming to you. You weren't hiding, and she wasn't searching. You were just there, and she was going to get you. I guess the only way I could describe this woman, other than hag, would be probably a term most people don't know, but I don't. Maybe I'm not giving the audience of this podcast enough credit. Baba Yaga would be the term that I would use. She was my mother came from Ukrainian immigrants, and Baba Yaga was essentially like the boogie woman, the witch, you know. And picture her as a woman in Hansel and Gretel, you know, myth. But this woman had frayed hair, and she was terrifying. If you look it up, Baba Yaga, B-A-B-A space Y-A-G-A, Baba Yaga, and she had these crow chicken foot feet that would almost bend back, and she would find me every night. Then if it wasn't that dream, it was another dream. It was a dream where I was out in my neighborhood on a hill that overlooked the row of houses that my parents owned. They didn't own all the houses, but their house was there. And I would be walking with friends, and then you'd get that feeling again, that dreadful instance of terror. You know, in most dreams, my friends just kept walking. In some dreams, they disappeared. But it would always happen when I crossed this house, this house that was made of almost like black coal. It looked like black wood. In that second dream, whenever my friends kept walking, and I would sit there or stand there, knowing not to cross this house, the clouds would roll across the sky, and they'd get darker and darker and darker. So I had no option but to get to my house, because you didn't want to be outside. And there was, again, that sense of urgency, like you had to go. And no matter how many times I went through that dream, I couldn't go around the house, I couldn't go a block over, I had to go across the house. Whenever I did, that woman would wail like a banshee, but deeper, almost like, you know, if any of you have lived in the Midwest, maybe you know what a tornado warning sounds like. I'm not going to make it in my car. People will think I'm crazy. It's stuck here in traffic. But it starts off slow, and then it roars as it gets longer and louder and deeper. And she would cry, and then she would come after me again. When she would catch me, it's going to sound stupid, she would just almost like it would, I guess I have to describe it as tickling me, you know? It doesn't sound bad. I personally don't like to be tickled, but I had never known abuse or pain or broken any bones or been in a fight up until then in my life, so I had only known that sense of, I don't know, fraught or irritation. And it wasn't just like someone was tickling you under your arms or on your feet. It was like when you pull one of those prank sticks of gum or one of those pens that kind of shock you. It was that. but it wasn't for half a second. It was for what felt like minutes, and it was terrifying, you know. And I would have that dream every night for what felt like years, probably was years. But as time went on, I began to recognize that they were dreams before these triggers would go off in my head saying, hey, this isn't normal, you have to get out of this. So I'd almost do it. It felt like a backflip in the dream, you know, you're just pulling yourself out of this world. And over the years I got pretty good at that, and the dream still happened, but it'd still only be what felt like seconds, you know. Of course, maybe hours have passed since I had fallen asleep, but they were done quicker, and they were manageable. But then I went through some changes in my life, and years later, I think when I was around 10 years old, my dad got offered a job in Iowa. And years prior to that, my grandfather, my mother's father, Nicholas, had a stroke. And he was bedridden. He was still resolute. He was strong. He was a very tough man. But I remember the week before we were supposed to move, my mother and I were supposed to drive out, maybe that Friday, I think towards the end of that week, and then my sister and my father would fly out, and then we'd meet the movers, and we'd move into our new house. But then I remember I had a dream, and it was normal, I guess. I mean, it was a going away party. We were all out in our backyard, and everyone was there, all our family members, and we were having a good time, and I was playing as a kid would at a party like that, you know. And then I see the house, and so immediately I try to back out of the dream. I know this is a dream, okay? I'm now conscious of that, and I can't. And I remember everyone laughing at me at the party. Like, oh, that's what kids do, they're goofing around, how fun. And then my mother goes and asks me, Nick, I need you to go inside, I need you to get this. I don't know what it was, it could have been a spoon, or it could have been a cake, I don't remember. But I just said, okay, if this was a dream, I'd have been able to get out by now, I think. So I'll just play along here, otherwise they think I'm insane. So I go to the back door, sliding door, to a sunroom, they called it, where it's just basically skylights are the whole ceiling. And as I'm about to walk in the door, this snake, it wasn't a big snake. I mean, it was a snake that would scare a child. It was just a normal snake, maybe like 3 feet in length, not like an anaconda or anything. It actually looked like the snake on the Don't Tread on Me flag. It was gold and black. Kind of wove its way between my legs, and then it looked up at me, and I remember slowly turning my head to look at my mother and anyone else who could help me get this snake away from me, and everyone was gone but my mother. She was standing there looking at me, smiling and nodding her head, kind of like, go on, go in. I realized that it wasn't my mother. It was someone else. My mother wasn't concerned. If she saw that I was concerned, she would have come to me. She wasn't a tough love parent. And so now I don't want to go anywhere near her. So I turn to go back inside, and I hear this wail. I don't mean the creature that lives in the ocean. I hear wheeze and scream at the same time, like someone's exhaling and releasing pain. I woke up, which was a relief. And then I remember that my bed faced my door, and my door was closed. And then my mother comes in a few seconds after I woke up. She told me that my grandfather had passed away. And so, you know, I was 10 years old. I understood what dead meant. Understand that that means you don't come back and I don't get to see you every Sunday. I understand. But it was still painful to think of someone that I loved going into oblivion. So, in a rush of emotions, I cried and I told my mother about my dream, and then she stopped. And then she told me that her brother called to tell her about my grandfather passing, and he had told her about a dream that he had had, where he was at a dinner party, at our going away party. There was a snake, a golden black snake, coiled around the centerpiece as he was sitting, and then he heard a scream, and then he woke up. So, you know, we go and we do the whole funeral thing, you know, go to the wake and we go to the funeral, and I remember that the funeral, the part where we actually put the body in the ground, that was the day before my mother and I left to go to Iowa. I just tucked the dream in the back of my mind. I didn't feel like bothering her or anybody else with it. I put it in the back of my mind, and I had the same dreams again and again for the next few years until I stopped really remembering that I was having them, because the second I realized I was in them, I was out of them. I took myself out. Fast forward a few years, and I'm a junior in high school, and sister's a freshman, and we had moved to the Chicagoland area, and then my grandmother had a stroke. When she got there, my grandmother's health improved, and then there were rumblings that, again, she was having a relapse in conditions created by the second stroke. So then, in this dream that I had that night, it was different. Wasn't the same dream. I was just walking around our house in Aurora. And so I'm walking, and I was by myself, which, again, not crazy. So then I see that the basement door is open and the light is on. So I go to close the door and turn the light off, and I hear the shuffle, that same crackling shuffle. But it was faster this time. It wasn't dragging your feet. It was walking briskly while dragging your feet, I guess. So I thought, oh, maybe my sister was down there doing whatever teenage girls do. So I call out to her, and then the shuffling stops. So, I got goosebumps. So, excuse me. So I go to the top of the steps again, and I call out to her, and I don't hear anything. So I walk through the basement door pane, or whatever you want to call it, through the threshold of the door. And the basement is, when you walk in through the door, there's four or five steps, and then there's a wall. And so you turn left and you go to the basement, and it was a nice basement, finished, well lit, everything. It wasn't creepy. It wasn't used for storage or anything like that. The only thing scary about it was how many Philadelphia Eagles games I watched them lose in that basement. But other than that, it wasn't a terrifying basement. So there I am standing after that initial steps, and I see something out of the corner of my eye. It just scurries to the corner of the basement, but out of my view. So then I turn and I plant my feet and I look down and I say my sister's name again. And then this woman walks by the bottom of the steps, maybe about 13 to 15 feet from me, and she stops. And she's looking ahead, so I'm over her left shoulder, and she doesn't know I'm there. And then I get that sense, that dreadful instant of terror, and then I could tell that she knew from that where I was. So she turned to me, and it was my grandmother. It was, she was in a black gown, almost like a wedding dress, but black. Maybe not as long as a wedding dress, but a gown, I guess, would be appropriate. With a veil. But the veil was pulled back so I could see her face. And my first instant thought was, that's my grandmother. But then again, I knew better. And it wasn't my grandmother. She opened her mouth, not as if to say anything, or even to scream, just to release something almost. It was just enough where that it didn't feel cartoonish or fake, but it was enough for you to go, okay, this shouldn't be like that. It's not crazy, but it's offsetting. And then I see a snake. I see the same snake weaving between her legs, and she's looking at me with her beady black eyes, and not the kind of look that you give someone when you're listening to someone, or you're curious, or you're acknowledging them even, or you're happy or sad. It's a furious, we have history kind of look. And so now I'm already waiting for me to have the courage to back out of this dream so close to this woman, knowing that if I can't back out, she'll get me somehow. So I try, and then a voice comes out of her mouth that I've never heard before. And then I ran. And as I was running, I was trying to both get away from her and at the same time also trying to get out of the dream. And so I'm at a conflicted. I remember that she didn't stop that noise. So as I'm running, she of course catches me. And she just pins me down, pretty much. Can't move. I can't say I don't believe in sleep paralysis, but I don't think that I have it. But if I ever did in my life, it was then. And I'm just trying wildly to get out of the dream now. She's already got me. What's the point in fighting? I just want to be done. I want to get out. After what felt like minutes, whole minutes of just terror, I end up getting out of the dream, and the instant I come to consciousness, you know, I hit the bed pretty much. I don't think I was levitating, because I definitely don't think I believe in that. But I think I was trying so hard to get out of the dream that I was shaking and fighting as ferocious as I could to get out. And I remember the instant I woke up, my leg was in the air, my left leg was in the air, and then I come crashing down to the bed, and I hit my lower back or something. It was terrifying. So for the next 2 hours, I'm up, waiting to go to school. And then my grandfather waits till I come downstairs for breakfast. He told me my mother wanted to talk to me, and that early in the morning, my grandmother had passed. I didn't cry then, because I think I already knew. So then, you know, I think I go to school for the rest of that day, and then I leave for Philadelphia to go to the funeral that weekend. And when I'm there, my uncle, just very direct and matter-of-fact, he just walks up to me when no one's there, and he said, "Did you see the snake again?" Because I did. And I lied. I told him no, because not really something I guess I wanted to talk about then. But I don't really dream anymore, I guess. And I guess I'm happy for my fiance that she can enjoy those things. I don't think she's doing anything crazy. I don't think that she's becoming a space cowboy or anything ridiculous in her dreams. I just think that she finds them amusing stories that are good table conversation, I guess, in the morning. I guess that's my story. Like I said, I don't know if it's going to be shared. I don't think it's as riveting as any other story, but I just wanted to share it just because I think it would make me feel better. think it will. And that's why I love this podcast. There's, unlike movies or books or horror ghost story, you know, books where you get like 1,000 ghost stories from anything, whatever the theme is, ancient Scotland to, you know, modern day Illinois ghost stories. There's always a sense of narrative, and I don't mean that nobody's narrating it. I mean, there's a tone, there's a theme, there's something that allows it to come full circle. There's closure. There's conclusiveness. It's exhaustive. I don't think I'll ever get it. You know, I don't think I'll ever know whatever happened to that hag, or what purpose she saw in communicating with me. I don't know why there was snakes. I don't know why my uncle only saw it too. I don't know if anyone else saw it and just never thought about sharing it. But yeah, so I just wanted to thank Lex and thank all of the listeners. This is a truly great podcast. It's a lot of fun. Like I said, I'm going to go and I'm going to subscribe to the VIP tonight. And as ridiculous as that might sound to my fiance, why I want to spend $15 on a podcast so I can hear ghost stories, it won't matter. It'll be worth it. I hope everybody has a good week. Thank you.
This is from Caitlin in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. A grandmother's rocking chair. During high school, my friend's family owned a cottage in the woods about an hour and a half from the city. It was actually two cottages, one that belonged to her grandmother, and right next door was a guest cottage. I had met her a few years before her grandmother had passed away. She had briefly mentioned to me seeing her grandmother in the cottage after her passing. I believed her, but I didn't think too much of it. One weekend, my friend's mom took three of us girls to the cottage to stay overnight. The first floor had a small sitting area with a TV, sofa, and rocking chair. The second floor was a loft where we slept, with a connecting bedroom where my friend's mother slept. We explored the fields and streams of the woods nearby, stocked up on jelly beans for the evening, shopped at outlet stores, and took silly pictures with our disposable cameras. I was relieved we were staying in the guest cottage, because in the back of my mind, I kept thinking of my friend's grandmother. And then I woke up in the middle of the night, wide awake. Did I wake up because I was sleeping somewhere unfamiliar? Or did I wake up from the sound of the steady back and forth of the rocking chair downstairs? Both my friends were asleep in their sleeping bags. Back and forth. The bedroom door was shut. Back and forth. Back and forth. There were no lights on downstairs to indicate that someone was up. Back and forth. I decided it was her grandmother rocking away on that chair. Back and forth. Back and forth. Back and forth. I pretended to be asleep. I was too paralyzed with fear to do anything else for some time. Finally, I whispered to my friends and woke them up. In the time I spent trying to wake them, the rocking ceased. I tried to explain what I heard, but they were tired and quickly fell back to sleep. I played solitaire until I drifted off, but the rocking chair and entire cottage stayed quiet. I retold the rocking chair story the following morning. None of them admitted to using the rocking chair that night. I recently brought this story up over 10 years later with my friend. I recounted the story to her again, and she told me more details of when she saw her grandmother. My friend was walking to her grandmother's cottage shortly after her passing to get something from the spare refrigerator. As she approached, she saw her grandmother in the nightgown she had always worn walk past the window and into another room. My friend turned and went straight back to the guest cottage. The two cottages have since been torn down, and a new one was built further on down the road. We had another girls' weekend in the new cottage, and the new furnishings did not include a rocking chair. This story is from Addie in San Francisco. San Francisco Victorian. I was alone in the afternoon at my then-boyfriend's apartment in the San Francisco's Mission Dolores district. He lived in a Victorian home built approximately in the 1900s that was split into four units. He lived in the lower unit, a two-room apartment with a very small kitchen and a bathroom in the back of the apartment. You had to walk through the bedroom to get to the bathroom and the kitchen. A two-panel window was in the bedroom, and the window let in light by the bed, but the outside of the window was surrounded by four sides of the building, so it was completely enclosed, and there was no access to the 10-by-10-foot square of gravel below. As I was saying, I was alone in the apartment in the living room, and it was in the afternoon. I was flipping through a magazine, not thinking of anything in particular, when something made me all of a sudden more alert and made me look up toward the bedroom and to where the kitchen was. As I looked up, I saw a solid-looking man in a dark derby hat with bushy sideburns, a long dark coat, holding a cane as he slowly walked out of the wall across the room and then left the wall and disappeared. He didn't look at me. He just walked across in an even pace. For a few minutes after that happened, I just kept staring at the place where he had walked, in astonishment and surprise. He was not see-through. He seemed solid, and I saw him close enough that I saw details such as his bushy sideburns, and watched the gait in which he strode through the wall, across the room, and out the opposite wall. I got up and actually touched both sides of the wall and opened the back door that was adjacent to the kitchen to look out and see if there was anything there, but there was nothing. I wasn't scared, because for some reason I knew he did not see me. It seemed to me that he was the ghost of someone who had died in the building. There were several other experiences in that apartment. One time, we were pet-sitting a small dog, and one night the dog kept growling and barking at the bedroom window. We looked out and saw nothing. The dog was clearly barking an alarm-type bark and was agitated at something we could not see. Another time, we heard footsteps of shoes crunching on the gravel of the space outside the bedroom window, which, as I said, was surrounded by four walls, and there was no way anybody could have crawled out of there or even had access to get into the enclosed area. We were scared at that, and it took a lot of courage to creep to the window to look out in the area as the footsteps continued, but did not see anything. I had always felt uncomfortable and uneasy in that back part of the apartment, where the small kitchen and bathroom were. I'm a big fan of taking baths, and my boyfriend had a huge, lovely clawfoot tub in his bathroom there, and I would have used that tub a lot, but something always made me feel uneasy in there, so I never took baths there. I only rushed in to use it and rushed out, because I always felt if I spent a longer period of time in there, I would see something I did not want to see. A woman who was the upstairs neighbor was in the front of the building in the landing, and I asked if she had seen anything unusual. She matter-of-factly said, "Oh, you mean the man in the derby hat. I see him all the time." I will never forget that experience, and it has intrigued me for over 20 years now. Recently, I drove by to get the address and went to the public library to do some research on the house, if there were any deaths there, etc., but unfortunately I found no information. I was even considering contacting the owner of the building, but it's owned by a realtor company now. I've had other similar experiences, and some much more menacing in feel, but this one experience really has intrigued me, and I will forever wonder who this man was and why he is still visible to some people who live in that Victorian house. This is from Sean in Atlanta, Georgia. Haunted Berlin apartment. In the mid-80s, I was serving as a missionary in Berlin, Germany. I was 19 years old at the time, and knew I would be in Germany for 2 years working for the church. As missionaries, we would always be paired with another missionary, so we would never really be alone. During my first winter in Berlin, I was asked to open a new area in northern Berlin. This involved finding an apartment as well as getting to know the people in the area. Apartments were not very easy to find at that time, so we were surprised during our first visit to find an older lady putting a sign indicating an apartment available. We were walking along a tree-lined street in a wooded neighborhood, which was not heavily populated. We approached her and asked about the apartment and availability. She literally had the vacancy sign in her hand during our discussion. She smiled and asked us to follow her so she could let us see the living quarters. The second story of her home had been converted to an apartment. Access to the apartment was through an external staircase. The apartment was beautiful, far nicer than we as missionaries had ever experienced. So our first thought was we would not be able to afford it. The front of the apartment overlooked the street, while the kitchen overlooked a cemetery in the back. She did say the entire upstairs was available for use, except for one room, which she had locked. She outlined that this room was off-limits and that nobody was to enter it. We told her we loved it, but most likely could not afford it. She asked what we could afford, and we were surprised when we were told she simply said, "Done deal." We moved in shortly after and knew immediately that something was off. Although the living quarters were comfortable, the other rooms in the apartment had an oppressive, heavy feeling of sadness. I had never experienced anything like it previously in my life, so I was challenged to understand what was happening. We didn't spend much time in the apartment because we were outside the entire day helping people and serving others. However, nighttime was different. The first week there, we were making some late-night cookies in the kitchen and getting ready and planning the next day. I was sitting at the kitchen table, which overlooked the backyard and the cemetery. It was an extremely cold winter and very dark. Yet when I looked out the window, I saw a figure walking through the graveyard holding a candle in a red fishbowl. I could not make out the features of the person, but they walked to our backyard and stopped and looked up at our apartment. Although the candle provided an eerie glow, I couldn't make out who it was holding the candle. The figure then walked through the graveyard, out of sight. Later that week, I was taking a shower when something physically bumped against me, something heavy. Nothing was in the shower with me, but I physically felt something bumping into me. I left quickly, very perplexed. Shortly thereafter, I started waking up at 3:30 in the morning for no reason. The first few times, I simply went back to bed. After several nights of this happening, I started listening to my surroundings. I could hear something in the bathroom shower area, although nobody was there. I mentioned this to the other missionary serving with me, and he expressed concern as he outlined he had been waking up at the exact same time. Finally, we woke up again on another night, and we felt the need to leave the apartment. We left and walked around the block, only to return and find all of the lights on in the apartment. We immediately thought we were being robbed, so we charged up the stairs and found the apartment empty. A week later, I decided to make a recording of some music my fellow missionary had. We had two cassette recorders, so I arranged to play his music on one recorder and record an empty cassette on the other, and simply put the recorders next to each other. We left one morning and returned for lunch, and found this method worked fine, so I flipped the cassettes in both recorders to record the other side while we were out in the afternoon. We returned that night and found the recorder with my cassette completely rewound.
I thought I had forgotten to hit play. However, when I hit play, it had the music on it. We thought perhaps the recorder had an automatic rewind function, so we simply played the music while we were planning out the day and preparing an evening snack. When the cassette came to the end of the music, we were sitting around the table, and the music ended. I let it play while I finished my sandwich. Then, we were surprised to hear on the cassette the sound of a door opening. The recorder was recording what had happened earlier in the day in our apartment. We then heard 4 footsteps to the door to the living room quarters open. We then heard a voice in an unfamiliar language shriek out something loud and angry, at which time the recording stopped. After further investigation, we discovered the sound of the first door opening on the cassette was that of the door to the room we were to never enter. We'd been receiving mail for a lady we assumed to be the previous tenant. We kept the letters and approached the landlady and asked for a forwarding address so we could get her mail. The landlady took the mail and told us not to worry about it. We continued to receive mail for the previous tenant, so we again approached the landlady with a request for a forwarding address. She then told us the previous tenant was dead. She had committed suicide in our apartment early one morning. The landlady had made the grisly discovery when she saw all of the lights in the apartment were on one morning. She found the previous tenant had hanged herself in our bathroom. The room we were never to enter was the bedroom of this young lady, and it still had her bed and belongings in it. The landlady couldn't find a family member for the young lady, so she was still in possession of her belongings. She then told us the young lady was buried in the cemetery in the back. She took us to the grave, and there by the headstone was a red fishbowl with a candle inside. Postscript. I was transferred to another area a few weeks later and tried to forget the experience. Several months later, I was at a missionary zone conference when I overheard some missionaries talking about a haunted apartment. I introduced myself and asked which apartment they were talking about. It was the same one. They told me the mission president had called them one morning and told them a missionary had an accident and was at the hospital. He asked them to please go to the injured missionary's apartment and get some of his clothing and meet them at the hospital. The missionaries agreed, and when they got to the apartment, they were met with an overwhelming feeling of despair and sadness. They gathered the clothing. While in the apartment, one of the missionaries was going to open the door to a room where the other missionary said, "Please do not open that door." I do not know what is behind that door, but it is not good. They did not open the door and left and brought the injured missionary some clothing and personal belongings. I asked them how the missionary had been injured, and they told me he had fallen in the shower and broke his arm severely, compound fracture. I told them that I had lived in that very apartment and asked them to describe which door they had elicited such a feeling of dread. They described the door to the bathroom where this young lady had taken her life. The apartment was closed shortly thereafter, and missionaries do not live there anymore. And that is it for this year's Anything Ghost Mega Macabre Halloween special. I hope you enjoyed some, most, or all of it. I enjoyed putting it together, and it was a lot of work. And as there is every year, there were a few stragglers that didn't make the deadlines. Plus, there were some people that sent in multiple stories, and I didn't want to overdo it. I threw a couple in this time. But, so I'm going to do my signature Anything Goes Leftover Halloween Candy Show, and that'll be in early November, so expect that coming up. And don't forget about the sponsor for this show, audiblepodcasts.com/ghost. Sign up now and get a free 30-day trial, plus a free audiobook, and cancel at any time. And coming in this January, the end of this January 6, 2016, will be the 10th anniversary of Anything Ghost.
and I have a complete archives of all the shows I put together and then some more things available to my VIP group. And if you want to become a VIP group member, there's a one-time $15 charge, and that'll make you a lifetime member of the group. And you can find out more information by going to anythingghost.com and clicking on the VIP group button. Thank you, everyone, for sharing your stories with Anything Ghost. And if you want to share your story, send any correspondence to lex@anythingghost.com. Or you can go to anythingghost.com, and there's a link there where you can share your stories. All right, so I'll talk to everybody in the Leftover Halloween Candy Show in early November. It'll be show number 215. Until then, have yourself a wonderfully haunting Halloween, and take care.
Take care.
Take care.